Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care of yourself.
Let's get into the early life of, what's his name?
Joseph Brandt.
Joseph Brandt. Hit it, Beth.
So unfortunately, I could find nothing about Brandt's early life. Nothing. Not even his date of birth. But based on his stated age in various articles, Brandt was probably born around 1971. In one article, he was quoted as saying that he had an eighth grade education.
During later court proceedings, one forensic psychologist diagnosed him with schizoaffective disorder, which is a mental health disorder that is marked by a combination of schizophrenia symptoms, such as hallucinations or delusions, and mood disorder symptoms, such as depression or mania.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cross between schizophrenia and bipolar. It's not good.
Ah, I see. Yeah. I see. Okay. And without further ado, let's get into the timeline. What happened? Hit it, Beth.
Well, court records show that Joseph Brandt was in and out of jail for a series of petty offenses around the time of the killings. He had been arrested for cocaine possession, possession of stolen property, and criminal damage to property, among other offenses. So he, yeah, I don't know. He was not a good guy.
he was busy in terms of his criminal offenses, but I'm glad that we pointed out
busy.
That he had been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder after these crimes took place. And I wonder how much of his mental health is a part of his survival and crime story, you know?
Yeah, don't know.
We don't know, but I have many questions. Anyway, Brandt was cruising Galvage Street. Cruising. Oh,
cruising,
so fun.
Yeah.
Remember those
cruising?
Days?
Woo! Yeah.
He was cruising Galvez Street on October 17, 2007, when he spotted a woman and solicited her for sex. After she rejected his advance, he pulled a knife on her, then strangled her to death while trying to rape her. Although this woman has never been identified, she has been referred to as Jane Doe, and she was certainly a human being who had people that loved her, and she did not deserve the ending that she got.
Yeah. Brandt then placed the woman's body inside a stolen car that had been abandoned in a secluded area near train tracks. He then poured gasoline on her body and set her on fire in order to cover up the murder. And Jane Doe was found burned beyond recognition inside the charred stolen car.
On January 11th, 2008, Jody Johnson, 47, was murdered. Jody was a former cheerleader and homecoming queen from Warner Robins, Georgia, who joined the U.S. Navy. She became addicted to painkillers for migraines while serving in the Philippines, and she fell on hard times. Her father said she left Georgia with her boyfriend so that he could work in New Orleans as a carpenter.
According to Brandt, he saw Jody walking in the 7th Ward, and he solicited her for sex. He then drove her to a remote area and forced her to perform oral sex on him with a gun to her head. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
Then he forced her out of the car into an overgrown vacant lot, shot her in the head, and set her body on fire with gasoline.
On August 11th, 2008, 32-year-old Jessica Hawk was stabbed to death in her Charteris Street home in Bywater. Jessica, an Ohio botanist, moved to Uptown New Orleans in 2003 to begin a new job. She evacuated the city before Hurricane Katrina and the levee failures. Then she moved to Bywater 2 months later.
Jessica worked as an entomologist with the Audubon Institute and was awarded the first post-Katrina scholarship for graduate study in the biology department at the University of New Orleans. She was scheduled to begin her dream job at the New Orleans Botanical Garden at City Park the week following her death.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's sad.
According to her friends and family, Jessica just loved New Orleans. Her aunt said, quote, she lost her house in Katrina, but she moved closer to the French Quarter where this happened. She was just a good girl. She rode her bike all around town and just loved being here in New Orleans, unquote.
Friends became concerned when they hadn't heard from her for a day, and more so after she failed to show up for work. New Orleans police performing a wellness check found Jessica dead on the floor of her home. She'd been stabbed to death.
So these are escalating.
Yes. And the first two were outside.
Mm-hmm.
And then this one was inside of the home. And I couldn't find any information about, like, how did he get into the home?
Yeah.
Or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, gosh, what would we do without the OG of true crime? I don't know. And I don't want to know. Anyway, inaccurate information gathered from canvassing Bywater led authorities to release a sketch of a potential subject that bore no resemblance to Brent. Not a one. Didn't even look remotely like him. Forensic evidence recovered from Hawk's home was inconclusive. And those two facts helped her case go cold for years.
Then on September 27th, 2008, Kirsten Bridham, 25, was murdered. Kirsten was an activist from San Francisco who had come to town as a volunteer. She was the organizer of a monthly San Francisco gathering called the Really, Really Free Market, at which people exchanged goods and services. People brought their rummage to the park on the last Saturday of the month and gave it away.
That is such a wonderful idea.
Yeah, it is.
Wow. Oh, I hope somebody kept that going. According to friends and family, Kirsten loved the freedom of traveling and of cycling. Her friend Frank Lindsay said, quote, she was just an amazing individual that did things all directed at helping our planet peacefully coexist, unquote. That's dope.
Nice.
Yeah.
2 months prior, Kirsten left San Francisco to tour the United States via Amtrak. As part of her trip, she protested outside the Republican National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota, and spoke with housing activists in Philadelphia.
Mm.
She had arrived in New Orleans 2 days before her body was found.
Oh. In the early morning hours of September 27th, she was last seen alive, riding her bike after socializing at a nightclub. Later that day, police found Kirsten's body abandoned in the Ninth Ward on Lausat Place in the Florida neighborhood, about 3 miles northeast of the French Quarter.
Brandt sexually assaulted her before shooting her in the head, then robbed her of her bicycle and tote bag. According to Brandt, he was on his way to buy gasoline to burn the body when he got into a car accident. So he ended up abandoning Kirsten's body on a street.
What? I was wondering in the last one, like, did he have the gasoline with him? But no, he does the murder and then is like, I need to go get me some gasoline.
Goes and gets gasoline.
And then he goes
and comes back.
On down to the QT and comes
yeah,
back. Wow.
Which is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
unorganized. Not very well planned. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm learning so much on this show. Anyway, so because she was found without a wallet or purse, police initially believed her death occurred during a robbery gone wrong. Her body lay in the New Orleans morgue for 2 days before she was identified.
At the time that Jessica and Kirsten were killed, some suspected a link between the two murders. Jessica's murder occurred less than 2 miles from where Kirsten was killed, and a little more than a month later. Their youth and the fact that they were recent arrivals to New Orleans fueled early speculation that their deaths could be linked. And I would also say that their social status also linked to them, whereas the two earlier women
mm-hmm.
were of a different status.
Socioeconomic caste, if you will.
Yes.
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 So now let's get into the investigation and the arrest. So in 2010, police released a composite sketch of a man wanted for questioning and Jessica Hawk's murder. And that same year, Crime Stoppers increased a reward for information leading to an arrest in the case to $25,000, but no solid suspect was developed. The killing eventually became a cold case tasked to NOPD Detective Winston Harbin. And fun fact about my boy Winston. Ever heard of hashtag original wobble cop? Wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble baby. Come on. Get up. Yeah, yeah, get up. So anyway, that's him. Officer Harbin doing the famous wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble baby dance in a Santa Claus outfit. Oh my God, that's I couldn't believe it. I was so excited to find this fact and bring it to the pod. So just for those who don't know, the wobble line dance is a popular line dance in the Black community. And we do it at weddings and at parties. It's also popular at clubs, bars, and schools and dances. But anybody from New Orleans knows wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble baby. And this detective has a viral video involving the dance. Anyway, back to the story. Sorry.
So a break in the case finally came in September of 2013. Harbin received information about a possible suspect and traveled to Texas to speak with Brandt, who was incarcerated on unrelated burglary charges and was serving an 11-year sentence in Beaumont, Texas.
Brandt confessed to Hawk's murder during the interview with wobble baby, wobble cop, Detective Harbin, and the detective secured an arrest warrant on February 5th, 2014. Brandt was charged with second-degree murder and obstruction of justice in the death of Jessica Hawk.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries. Okay. Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So
nice.
I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah, I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's better, HELP.com/fruit.
We are gathered here today to give you permission to plan the wedding that you want.
I'm Jessica Bishop.
And I'm Sari Wienerman.
And we're the hosts of the Bouquet Toss podcast.
Today's couples have to juggle so many things, from family expectations to outdated traditions and what's currently trending.
So to make it easier, we're going deep to figure out why we do weddings the way that we do, so you can decide what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans.
You are cordially invited to subscribe to the Bouquet Toss wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcast.com.
By the power vested in us, we pronounce you free to plan your day your way.
So now let's get into the trial. What the what, Beth?
Well, there was no trial.
Huh?
So at first, Brandt's attorneys raised questions about his mental competency, and Brandt refused to cooperate with a mental competency evaluation, becoming disruptive during a court appearance in October and refusing deputies' directives to come to court on December 1st.
But 5 days later, he was deemed competent by a court-appointed panel of doctors. And in December of 2016, Brandt pleaded guilty to Jessica Hawk's murder. He offered Hawk's relatives no statement and no reason for Jessica's murder.
Jessica's aunt, Danita Shedden, said that she was glad that there was no trial. Quote, "We wouldn't have been able to handle a trial. This already has been like reliving it all over again. But seeing him sitting there with nothing to say, no care about what he'd done, just made me seem more determined not to cry when I spoke to him and to be strong for Jessica," unquote.
Wow.
Yeah.
Both Danita Shedden and Jessica's brother, Brandon Hawk, read victim impact statements directed to Brandt in court. Brandon also read a statement written by Jessica's grandmother, Bonnie Hawk.
Quote, "The pain is so bad, I feel like I'm smothered and can't catch my breath. Words cannot express the devastation of losing her. As you stand before a judge in court today, I have no vengeance toward you. It will be enough knowing you will never be able to hurt anyone else again. Someday, you will stand before a higher judge, and your soul will be on trial," unquote.
Granny dropped the mic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Brandt was sentenced to life in prison to be served after he finished his time in Texas. Then in January of 2018, Brandt confessed to the other three murders. Authorities sent an investigator to the prison outside Huntsville, Texas, after Brandon told his attorneys he wanted to provide information on other unsolved killings in New Orleans.
So I couldn't figure out exactly how this occurred, if he just offered it up. That's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but in exchange, he wanted an agreement that he would not face the death penalty and that he would serve his sentence in a Louisiana penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that he wanted to go to Louisiana.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't really know.
Uncomfortable in Texas.
Well, I hear that Texas sucks. So
wait, I haven't heard that. I thought number one destination in the world for anybody who's marginalized or poor or.
But I can't believe that Louisiana prisons are any better. So I don't know.
Good point. Good point. Oh, my God. There are no lies in any of your statements.
So after this agreement, he then gave detailed confessions to killing the three women.
But it was a hot mess. Yep. In multiple court appearances, he yelled and swore at officials, hollering and carrying on. And at one point, he refused to sign the plea document. In 2019, an Orleans Parish Criminal District Court judge ruled he was mentally incompetent and could not stand trial. Get him out of here. We don't have time for this nonsense.
A forensic psychologist said he believed that Brandt suffered from schizoaffective disorder, saying, quote, "His symptoms seem to fluctuate, and schizoaffective disorder involves a combination of symptoms of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder," unquote.
After treatment in a mental health facility, the case was allowed to go forward in February of 2020. Then, remember this, bitch, COVID caused all kinds of delays in proceedings as everything, including the courthouse, closed down. After the pandemic delays, court proceedings finally picked up again in 2021.
Brandt pleaded guilty to three counts of first-degree murder in a plea deal that spared him the death penalty. Brandt finally signed his plea form, but at a hearing, he continued to interrupt the judge and lawyers.
After hearing a detective account of his confession, Brandt said, quote, "He's saying stuff I didn't even tell him, ma'am," unquote. Brandt acknowledged killing the women, but said he, quote unquote, only kidnapped Bridham and did not have sex with her or the victims, despite his confession about forcing them to perform oral sex.
Okay.
Were you lying then or are you lying now?
Yeah. Even as Brandt entered his final plea, he had another outburst in court.
Oh, boy.
He began berating his own public defenders, calling one a fucking two-legged dog.
Oh!
Yeah. And then saying, quote, "He always got some fucking bullshit going on," unquote.
Wow. You know, I love this guy's a monster, but he really said what he meant with his chest.
Yeah.
He gave it all. He gave it his all. He didn't hold back. And he's still going to jail, though. Anyway, Brandt refused to move forward until a black attorney arrived to represent him. Then, at last, he pleaded guilty to the three counts of first degree murder. So where are they now? Tell us, Beth.
Well, in 2018, Jessica Hawk's brother, Brandon Hawk, said his family travels regularly to New Orleans to maintain a garden that had been erected in his sister's honor.
That is so beautiful.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Kristen Bridham's mother, Mamie Page, who lives in California, said the idea of traveling to New Orleans is too painful. She said she is glad authorities can close their investigation into her daughter's killing, but a sense of healing remains elusive for her family.
Quote, there is no closure for losing a child in such a way.
Mm.
It's horrible and it's unfathomable mm-hmm. because knowing her, you can't imagine anyone would want to hurt her, unquote.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
So now let's get into our takes and what we think made Brandt snap.
Okay.
What do you got, Beth?
Well, he would have been around 36 when he committed the first murder, the Jane Doe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I have a hard time believing it was his first.
Because, I do too, just based on how things went.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but serial killers don't usually start that old.
Right. And also the schizoaffective
disorder.
The disorder. Yeah. That's not something that manifests usually in your 30s. That's something that manifests in your 20s normally,
yeah,
right?
I think so. Yes. Or at least earlier than 36.
Right.
Like it could
that's
start
ancient.
Manifesting. Yeah. 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 And I have no idea what made him snap.
Mm.
I wish I knew more about his early life. It
yeah,
sounds
same.
Like he only had an eighth grade education. So yeah. It doesn't sound like he had a great childhood.
Yeah, it sounds like there were challenges based on his rap sheet. Survival was
for sure
on his priority list. But I think this is all speculation, but mental health challenges and again, trying to survive. I think that contributed to his willingness to harm other people.
Yeah. His desire to hurt other people.
Right, right. And I was thinking about schizoaffective disorder symptoms. Again, it's odd to me that they manifest in your close to 40 is something I didn't know happened. And I was surprised given that this happened that we don't know more about this case or the perpetrator's early lives or more about the lives of the victims.
Really wasn't very much out there about this story, which is
also odd
weird.
Because we had the internet around Katrina. We had MySpace. We had social media profiles, even though they were, you know, rudimentary, I guess. Facebook was around. But the details of the case must have slipped through the cracks, given all the disasters that came after it. You know, there's the aftermath of Katrina and then there's COVID-19. And I think there was an oil spill in between there somewhere. Like,
yeah, probably.
There was a lot going on. And I'm glad the three of the victims' families got to see the person responsible get convicted and put away. But weirdly, I also thought a lot about how this case provided different examples of what the loved ones left behind think and how they feel and try to exist in a world without their loved ones, like
visiting
the city and the garden and
not being able to visit the city.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I also hope that one day Jane Doe gets identified.
Yeah, yeah.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes, I've traced heroic acts of bravery, and I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.
Beth, where can the people find us?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media.
This is a weekly podcast, and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
Thank you. Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder? Or just a horrible accident? That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.
The truth about the Haditha massacre has been covered up, but not anymore.
I know you know what happened.
They went into houses and killed women and children.
What are you thinking?
What a mess.
U.S. Marines murdered innocent civilians in cold blood.
And at the center of it all
is 25-year-old Sergeant Frank Wooderich.
And me. Murder in House 2. A new podcast from Crowd Network.